Hello and welcome to Witchy Wellness Radio. I'm your host, Lauren Chalantani, women's holistic health coach and fellow recovering perfectionist. This podcast was created to show you that your body is not in the way. It is actually leading your way. Hello, and welcome back to the latest and greatest season of Witchy Wellness Radio. Again, I am your host, Lauren Chalantani, and you are listening to episode 91, Oasis of Hope Hospital with Francisco Contreras. So before we jump into today's amazing episode with Dr. Francisco, I want to take a second and let you guys know that this episode is sponsored by Magnesium. Living the Good Life Naturally, this beautiful brand created and researched heavily by Kristen Bowen. If you want to learn more about Magnesium, listen to episode 73, that's 7-3. If you guys are interested in supporting your nervous system, your digestive system, your stress level, your skin, and so much more and beyond, head over to the link in the show notes to purchase some magnesium today, and make sure you use the code WICHY, W-I-C-T-H-Y, to get 10% off of your purchase. And second thing, you guys may or may not know that I am an essential oil lover. I've been using essential oils for probably 6 or 7 years now, and my team is doing multiple weekly Zoom classes on Essential Oils 101, and if you guys are interested, head over to the show notes to schedule a free Essential 101 class today. So more on today's episode. Dr. Francisco Contreras serves as the director, president, and chairman of Oasis of Hope Hospital. As a distinguished surgical oncologist, Dr. Contreras is renowned for combining conventional but also alternative medical treatments with emotional and spiritual supports to patients with the most positive treatment experience possible. And in today's episode, you guys will hear what makes Oasis of Hope Hospital so different from other hospitals, how to overcome failures and devastating side effects of chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery. Is there really hope for people facing stage 4 cancer when chemotherapy has failed? Is there scientific evidence supporting the use of alternative cancer treatments? And what therapies do you use? And how do you treat advanced stage cancer patients differently than other oncologists? A comprehensive guide to plant-based nutrition therapy for cancer patients, the science of hope, and so much more. I hope you guys enjoy today's episode. Dr. Francisco is definitely going to warm your heart. Please enjoy episode 91, Oasis of Hope Hospital with Dr. Francisco Contreras. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Witchy Wellness Radio. Again, I am your host, Lauren Chalantani, and this is a show you get to learn how your body is not in your way, but actually leading your way. And our wonderful guest today, Dr. Francisco Contreras, serves as a director and president and chairman of the Oasis of Hope Hospital. And as a distinguished surgical oncologist, Dr. Contreras is renowned for combining conventional and alternative medical treatment with emotional and spiritual support to provide patients with the most positive treatment possible. And that is what it's all about. I'm so excited to learn more about what you do, Dr. Contreras, and Oasis of Hope. Welcome to the show today.
Well, Norman, thank you very much. It's an honor and a pleasure. And I love your motto that your body is to lead the way and not to be in the way or something like that.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Precisely, you know, we want to help people. Even though I'm an oncologist, the best way to treat cancer is to avoid it. So a lot of the things that we do here are preventive. And, you know, cancer is a very complicated disease, but it's not too complicated to avoid it. And so I'm very happy to be in your show. And it's a pleasure. So I hope that we provide information that is very inspiring for people to make little changes that can make tremendous impacts.
Of course, I'm sure we will have lots to dive into, but I would love to hear your background. You know, How did you get to do the work that you do today, running this beautiful hospital? And I know you've written and helped co-write a ton of books as well.
Yes. Well, I was actually born into it. My father founded the Oasis of Hope in 1963. Since I was very young, probably 12 or 13, I had decided that I wanted to be a surgeon, not just a doctor. I wanted to cut people and put them back together. So, later on in life, I saw that my father's work was really amazing. And so I wanted to be prepared and prepare myself to work with him in this field. So I chose surgical oncology as my specialty so that I could work with my father, because cancer is a devastating disease, emotionally, spiritually, as well as physically. And so providing patients with options to treat their disease was the main drive behind my decision to work with my father. And so that's my background. I studied pre-med in the States, medical school in Mexico, and I did my specialty in Austria, in Vienna, Austria.
Wow, all over the world. And you guys are currently in Mexico at Oasis of Hope, just on the other side of the border, if you will, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
The famous wall. We're just behind the famous wall. Yes. However you want to see it.
Well, I know that you guys treat cancer in a very holistic way, very different than, you know, conventional therapies. I would love to dive into, you know, everybody knows and hears about the side effects of chemotherapy. All right. And how can we overcome these failures with chemotherapy, with radiation, and with surgery, even though I know you are a surgeon at Astray.
Well, but believe it or not, surgery is the least aggressive. Chemotherapy is the most aggressive, and radiation in between. I think that the reason for the failure in oncology, and I say failure because every year more people die of cancer than the year before. And if we were making progress, that would change. For instance, in heart disease, the death rate of heart disease has dropped significantly in the last 10, 15 years, from a million to about 600,000 now. So that has improved tremendously, whereas in cancer is going the other way around. And very soon, I think cancer, if it hasn't surpassed it yet, it's going to surpass the deaths by heart disease or cardiovascular disease. And I believe strongly that the reason for the failure is not technical, not even for lack of brains. I mean, the most intelligent people that I know are working on cancer research. The innovation in the tools that we have to diagnose cancer now are amazing. Lack of money, well, right now because of the coronavirus is going to be a little bit of a problem. But in America, they spend billions and billions and billions of dollars on research. So why, when all of these things are put together, we don't have good results? I came to the conclusion that the problem is not technical, but philosophical. And what I mean by that is that cancer is being approached to date to what happens to the tumor. So everybody's focused on the tumor, and the patient goes unnoticed to the point, Lorraine, that when we evaluate results, so the reason why, you know, your listeners may be wondering, how can Dr. Contreras say that it's a whole failure when we hear of all of this breakthroughs? So the breakthroughs are on what's happening to the tumor. And because we are focusing on the tumor, we consider success if a tumor diminishes in size or goes away, whether the patient lives or dies. Isn't that crazy? So a success is a patient that dies when the tumor went away, because the treatment was successful, but the side effects were so horrible from chemo and radiation that the patient dies. And so we decided many years ago that for us, it was the other way around. We were going to focus all of our efforts on the patient. And so our success is on what happens to the patient. So we have many patients alive that we're told that we're going to live 3 months or 6 months. And here they are alive 20 years later, but they still have cancer. So I rather that have that failed success than a successful failure, you know? Because once the patient lives and enjoys life, whether the tumor is there or not is besides the point. So we have been working diligently for many years in converting cancer into a chronic ailment, because many times you can't cure it. But if you can live with it and enjoy life, then who cares, right? So our treatments are more humane in that sense. And they're based on two philosophical pillars. Number one, what Hippocrates said, first do no harm. And the translation today and with the medicine that we have now is that anything that I do for my patient is aimed at improving quality of life. So you mentioned, you know, the devastating effects of chemotherapy and how can we avoid it? Well, chemotherapy can be very effective, but destroy your quality of life. But sometimes, let's say a patient has a tumor in the main bronchi, correct? And the patient can't breathe. And if I give this patient natural therapies that are going to take 3 months to work, they work, but the patient's going to be dead tomorrow because the patient can't breathe, right? Whereas radiation that is an aggressive therapy, can break down the tumor within sometimes hours or days. And so I can improve the quality of life with an aggressive therapy. But now that I have a breathing patient, I know that radiation is not going to resolve the problem, but it's going to give me a breathing patient. Now I can give that patient the natural therapies for the long run. So at the Oasis of Hope, we are an integrative oncological center. We have everything available. All the natural, all the conventional. But we use it with the philosophy that I mentioned. First, do no harm. I have everything at my disposal to improve quality of life. The second pillar, love your patient as you love yourself. You know, love your neighbor as we say love your patient. Translation, I will only give my patient what I would be willing to give myself if I was in the same condition. So we design therapies for our patients that are aimed at improving the quality of life and that I would take them or I would give it to my wife. Well, I don't know how people are dealing with their wives. They say mother, so for sure, or my daughter. And then I know that I'm doing the perfect service for that patient. And I strongly believe that that is the reason why our results are so much better than in just about any oncological center in the world. It's because of that philosophy.
And I love your philosophy of addressing the whole person as well, the emotional and the spiritual aspects of it.
You're right. A big part of it is that we forget that a cancer patient has emotional and spiritual needs. And if you don't provide them, you're also doing a disservice. And so we've been criticized tremendously over the years for, you know, selling false hope because we give hope to the patients. But hope is a powerful healing agent. And without hope, you know, people die. If a lot of cancer patients die because they were told you're going to die in 3 months. And in 3 months, they're looking at the watch and say, oh, my God, I can't let my doctor down. And they drop dead. You know, we are an authority in the eyes of our patients. And so I rather provide hope to them than hopelessness. When you really think about hope, is there false hope? No. There's hope or no hope? And we acknowledge in medicine that the mind plays a major role. I don't know if you have heard of double-blind studies.
Oh, yes. I was going to say placebo effect.
Right? Exactly. So we do them to describe the placebo effect. So half of the patients know that they're taking the drug and the other ones don't, because before we did that, their results were skewed by the power of the mind of the ones that knew that were taking it and the ones that knew that were not taking it. That's the first blind. The second blind is that we as doctors can influence the patient. For instance, I own stock in the company that's making this new drug, right? And I tell the patient, hey, listen, this thing that you're going to take is the best thing since popcorn. It's just great. So I get the patient excited. Or my colleague whom I hate is the one that has stock. It's just a pharmaceutical industry. It's taking advantage of you. Those things sway the results. We know that's why we do double blind studies. The doctors don't know who's taking what, and the patients don't know. So the mind helps or hinders. Why not exploit, in the good sense of the word, that capacity of our mind for the good of the patient? The Greeks did it 300 years before Christ. They had this hospital. The first hospital ever built was 300 years before Christ in Pergamum. And so the patients would come to this temple. It was a temple to Asclepius. Asclepius is the god of medicine. And they would first be, received by the priests. And so they were evaluated spiritually. From there, they would go to the treatment area where they would be evaluated physically. And every day during the treatment for whatever disease, they would have to go through a tunnel. And this tunnel was dark, completely dark. And they would walk up and down. The tunnel is still there. You can see the ruins. And the tunnel has a hole on top. And unbeknownst to the patients, there were people on top of the tunnel telling them, you're going to do well. You're going to be healed. You have good chances. And the patients felt that it was the gods talking to them. And so, well, that's psychological, that's brainwashing that worked really well. And our mind is very powerful. So I don't care if they tell me that I'm selling false hope or not. I am going to be giving hope. That's why the name of our hospital is the Oasis of Hope, because hope is a very powerful emotion that can be very functional to people. So you're right. So it's, all of this philosophical differences account for the fact that our results are so much better.
Oh, yeah. I got into meditation through the work of Dr. Joe Dispenza, and he started a lot of his researching spontaneous remission. So these people who spontaneously healed, what were these underlying factors in all of these different cases? And one of the number one thing was hope.
Yes.
This vision of that future of being healed, this hope, this spiritual, emotional aspect. And, so there's so many books now related to, your subconscious reprogramming, even epigenetics, and how you can actually, through your mind and lifestyle choices, heal yourself and heal your genetic lineage. It's that topic to me, I know so little about, but it interests me so much.
And it's amazing. Yeah. Why not use it for the benefit of the patient? And everything has to do with the immune system. You see, the way your mind works affects the function, the quality and quantity of your immune system. There is no more powerful tool against cancer than your own immune system. And the most powerful immune stimulating agents are cheap, free. Meditation, laughter. It's incredibly powerful. Music. So we use all of those things for the benefit of our patients and ourselves.
Of course, of course. So we're talking about hope. And somebody who's facing, stage 4 cancer and chemotherapy has failed. Is there hope? What do you guys do? I know every patient is a different, different person, but yeah. Is there still hope when people think it's lost?
So I'll give you some examples with with prospective clinical trials that we did with stage four cancer patients. And these were all cancer patients were sent home to die because they already had, you know, the surgery, the radiation, the chemo, the new targeted therapies. They were sent home to die. From those patients, cancer of the breast, cancer patients that had failed to all of the therapies, the five-year survival rate in America is about 16%. Our five-year survival rate is 50%. For patients that come virgin to treatment to us, that is, they were sent home to die because they were so advanced that there was nothing that could be done for them, but they didn't receive chemo, radiation, or anything, and they come to us virgin to treatment, the five-year survival is 75%. So there's tremendous hope. There's always hope. While there's life, there's hope.
Yes, of course. And with that 75%, you know, I'm assuming that is because chemotherapy kills your own immune system, right? It kills anything in its path. So
exactly.
That makes sense.
Kill tumor cells. There's no question about it. It can be very effective, but it also kills the patient.
Yes. So I know, you know, this show, we're all about alternative therapies and, you know, the metaphysical kind of world, but what kind of scientific evidence supporting the use of alternative cancer treatments and therapies do you guys use?
There is, you know, for the alternative therapies, when we're talking about natural therapies, let's say vitamin C, amygdalin, latril, B17, as most people know it, there's a tremendous amount of scientific work that's published. So why is it therapies are not approved by the FDA? Well, the FDA requires, and I think correctly, that before they grant you permission to give it to people, that is a registration of your product to be able to sell it and to apply it to patients, you have to prove to them that your product is safe and effective. Now, effectiveness is fairly easy to resolve. You, for instance, the tumor is this size and then it goes down, well, it's effective. Now, safety is a completely different thing. You for instance, there was this a study that took 30 years for the effectiveness and safety of cholesterol-lowering drugs. So was it effective? Yes, the cholesterol was high, and then after you take the drug, it was low. After 30 years, the people that took the cholesterol-lowering drug had a higher death rate than the ones that kept their cholesterol high. So the safety issue was a big issue. It causes more death. So in order for you to prove safety to the FDA, it takes a lot of money, a lot of clinical trials of healthy, unhealthy people. And until you, after several years, you can say, you know, we've given this effectively for several years and nothing happened. All of this started with a drug in the UK and in America for morning sickness. You're too young to remember this, but what happened is that pregnant women today have a big problem with nausea. And so they gave this thalidomide, it's called. And it was very effective. It took away the morning sickness, but babies started being born without arms, without legs, and the cause was the medication. So in this, after 61, the FDA required the safety. All of this background, just to let you know that nowadays all pharmaceutical industry has to prove that it's safe, and it takes years and it takes a lot of money. The average in America for a drug to be approved is about $800 million. No fees, just research, just trials to prove that it's safe. Now, when this happened in the 60s, the industry said, well, what are you going to give me in return for all of this money that I have to spend? So they said, we're going to give you a patent. And in this patent, you're going to have a monopoly of this drug for a period of 20 years, minus the research time, sometimes it's only 12 years. And during this time, you have a monopoly so that you can make your money back. And they say, well, okay, that's fair. And that's why now you have the generics, right? A generic is a drug that labs that didn't do any research whatsoever wait for patents to die, and then they start making the product. Because once the patent is gone, the product becomes a public knowledge. So when you go to the government and you say, I want to do... I want you to register for me vitamin C. And I have all of the proof that in the laboratory it works. And the government says, yes, of course, prove to me that it's safe. You have to spend the $800 million. But there's no patent because it's natural. So the day that you register it, 20 laboratories can do it. And they didn't spend 1 cent. And that's the reason. There's no conspiracy against natural therapies. The reason is just money. Nobody's going to spend $800 million not to make them back. But people and doctors many times interpret this as it's not FDA approved, it's not good. So one day I had a very heated discussion with an oncologist. Why are you using these things that are not FDA approved? So I asked him, do you eat bananas, doctor? He said, well, yes, they're not FDA approved. So FDA approved is just a process. Doesn't really mean if it's good or not. I mean, many chemotherapies that have killed, you know, thousands of people, if not hundreds of thousands, have been approved. And they're deadly. So the reason why so many doctors don't use natural therapies, even though there's a plethora of research at the laboratory and in animals that proves that they're effective, they don't use it because they're not FDA approved. And then the AMA, that's the FDA, the AMA, if they find out in America that a doctor is using alternatives, they'll go and remove their license. Because they're using non-FDA approved drugs. So it's a mess, and it has to change. Fortunately, here in Mexico, because more than 51% of our people live in poverty, we are allowed to use many natural remedies because they don't have any money to see the doctor, much less to buy the drugs. And drugs are becoming extremely expensive nowadays. So why do people come to Mexico? Because here our FDA allows us or gives us a lot of freer hand to treat patients because of lack of money.
Yeah, and I always think of the term follow the money. And as sad as that may be, even, you know, in a healthcare system that trying to help people,
yes,
sometimes that can kink the hose in trying to help people.
Exactly. But again, I think that safety is a true issue. They have to do it in a way that other drugs are allowed to be produced in a different way to incentivize researchers and developers or people that put the money to make these natural, effective treatments available to people.
Agreed. And I know one of the most natural and effective methods is a plant-based nutrition.
Yes.
I know for myself.
Proven?
Yeah.
Over and over. And yet, you know, when a cancer patient asks a doctor, an oncologist, well, doctor, what should I do about my diet? It doesn't matter. Whatever you want to eat, eat. And the doctor says that because of ignorance, but the patient reads into that usually, because I talk to the patients, I'm dead. This guy just wants me to enjoy the last days of my life. Like, there's no hope for me. Because in my mind, I know that diet should make a difference, but the doctor's telling me to eat whatever, I'm dead. It's awful. the doctors don't think about the impact that our words have on patients. And diet makes a big, big difference. In 17, well, I did a revision of 17 clinical trials that we did in the past, since the 60s to now. And I was trying to find out what was the common denominator of all of our long-term survivors, because our therapy has evolved, a lot during the years. And I found that the common denominating factor for the long-living patients of the 17 studies was that they kept their diet. That was the determining factor. So diet plays a major role. And the best diet for a cancer patient is a vegan diet, low glycemic. And there are hundreds of publications about this. So there is really just negligence from doctors not to study this and to be interested. The FDA doesn't play a role, nothing. It's just the willingness of the doctor to study this and to do it, and they don't do it. They have been negligent, and many patients are not surviving and are not doing well because they are not told to change their diet.
Yeah, and I think that your core beliefs and how you approach the patient and not just the cancer ties perfectly into this. You know, you don't cut off the bad fruit and expect the whole plant to be healthy. You know, you water it, you make sure the soil is fertilized, you weed around the garden. You know, our bodies are this beautiful ecosystem.
Yes. Yes. You know, Hippocrates said that the health is the perfect balance between us and our environment. And it makes so much sense.
Oh, yeah. So a lot of people listening might know somebody who's had cancer or has cancer right now. For just somebody maybe who wants to live a healthy lifestyle, a preventative lifestyle, what would that look like?
So I mentioned that the perfect diet for a cancer patient is vegan, low glycemic.
Yeah.
For a healthy person, it doesn't have to be that dramatic, because it is a major change in your life. Even for vegan people or for vegetarians to go low glycemic, it is very difficult. What I would tell the healthy ones that want to improve on their life, There are three things that are not too difficult to do that can definitely lower your risk of developing cancer. Number one is to eat according to your design. And that's a little bit complicated, but if you look just at your teeth, so we have 32, 34 teeth, give or take, depending on how many, what you do. If you're a boxer, you may have less. But generally, of those 32, four are canine, right? So we were designed to eat meat. Otherwise, we wouldn't have canine teeth. But four out of 34 is about 11%. And we eat meat as if all of our teeth were canine and, you know, a foot long. So only 11%, 10% to 11% of our caloric intake should come from animals. So your plate, if you want to be a vegetarian, just plant. There are many benefits. There's no question about it. But if you can't, then eat very little meat and a lot of vegetables. Within that diet, try that your plate looks very colorful, because the color of vegetables determine the amount of nutrients. And so when you choose five colors, like say yellow, red, green, dark red, you will have an orchestration of nutrients that are going to be very healthy for you. Number two is exercise. People that exercise 4 hours a week reduce the risk of cancer by 50% without any other change in your life. So even if you're junk, if you start exercising, you will lower the risk by 50%. Imagine that. usually people that start exercising then start looking at their diet. So there's a little bit of controversy whether it's only the exercise or not. But 4 hours a week is not a lot. And the exercise, walking would be sufficient. The more you strain yourself, that is, if you sweat, then the benefit is higher. And then the third thing is to be content. What does that mean? To be content is not just to be happy, is to enjoy your life in the situation that you are in, right? Because like many philosophers said, you know, being rich is not what you have, but what you need. And so if you have a pair of shoes, you should be very happy because there's millions and millions of people that have no shoes. So be content. And in order for you to be content, you have to have spiritual fortitude. The importance of having spiritual fortitude is that when you have it, you make your emotions work for you. So emotions are not positive or negative. It's a misconception. Well, why do I say that? Because normally you say that love is a positive emotion, right? And anger is a negative emotion. Well, what if you get angry about the fact that some people are not eating and you do something about it, right? So, or you fall in love with a crook, right? That's not going to work for you. So depending on your spiritual fortitude, your emotions are going to be functional for you or dysfunctional. So anger can be functional or dysfunctional. Love can be functional or dysfunctional. And that's why we want to provide all of this resources to our patients. Because when you have cancer, you are angry. People say, I'm angry at the world, I'm angry. The truth is that you are angry at God for allowing this to happen to you. And that can be very dysfunctional. And so a person with a spiritual fortitude that has hope, that has faith, can change that. And so I've had patients tell me that cancer is the best thing that ever happened to them, right? Because it opened their eyes to the things that they were not appreciating, that they took for granted. And suddenly when you have a date with death, you say, wow, how beautiful is this sun? Just a sunrise is an amazing thing that you were not looking. So I agree with you totally that the holistic approach to diseases like cancer or other diseases that can be very devastating is the only way to help a patient, because you have to help them address all of those issues that they have in life. In cancer especially, there are many studies that will show you when that patient started developing cancer. It's usually a terrible emotional event. A death, a divorce. Divorce is more devastating to people than being incarcerated, according to a study in Harvard. They measured how impactful things are or happenings are to you and in numbers. And divorce is above losing a loved one. That's how devastating events can be. And so it's just very important to be strong spiritually for you to be really healthy.
For me, I really like looking at kind of the metaphysical or like the emotional possible causes between the root causes. Yes. And for cancer, well, what I've seen, and it kind of makes sense, is, you know, the inability to grow or the extreme need to grow. You know, a tumor is excess cells that, you know, continue to grow. And like what you just pointed out beautifully is that these traumatic events, you know, where the person is growing, this cancer is a reflection, almost as if God speaking to you, hey, you know, be present, be here. This is a gift for you. One of my favorite phrases in our household is life is not happening to you, it's happening for you. And
that's beautiful.
Some of the hardest times in my life, now I look back and I go, oh, I'm so glad those things happened. Yes. Because I wouldn't be who I am today. I wouldn't be where I am today with the people I'm with today. I would love to hear kind of the more of the transformations of the people, the patients themselves. Like you were saying, I can't imagine how angry and a victim you can feel to God about this happening to you. Mm-hmm. Coming out on the other side and just being in awe, which is what God is, and the in awe of a sunrise.
Yes. And so one of the things that we do with our patients, as soon as they arrive, our aim is to convert them from victims to victors. In victory is not necessarily linked to outcomes. Let me explain this to you. So you will meet many cancer patients that are cancer free, and they can't sleep and they can't enjoy life because they don't know when it's coming back. But they're cancer free, so they are still victims of the cancer. And on the other hand, you have a patient like the one that I mentioned to you. Cancer is the best thing that ever happened to me. And they're riddled with cancer, but yet they're victors. And once a patient is a victor, their chances of surviving the cancer is exponential in comparison to the ones that are victims. That's why recurrences are so high. Right? You give them a treatment that is effective, and then it comes back because they were never able to release themselves from the malignancy. And they continue to be victims. So being a victor of cancer is a decision, not a happening. It's not that the tumor went away or not. It's that you say today, I'm a victor of this cancer. I already beat it. Here in my mind, it's whatever happens, I'm happy. That's Eleanor Roosevelt said, you know, yesterday is gone, tomorrow is a mystery, today is a gift. That's why it's called the present. And so I teach my patients, today is the day that I don't know if I'm going to be back tomorrow. So I'm going to enjoy today to the fullest. You should too.
Ugh. I love that. I so, so, so much agreed to that. I just looked at the time. It has flown by that our episode is wrapping up. Was there anything else you wanted to cover or wrap up with a beautiful bow on top before we start closing the show down today?
Well, I'm just so grateful that you took the time to interview me. The latest book that Daniel and I wrote, Undermining Cancer, would be something wonderful for you that you can get for free on our website, oasisofhope.com. I think that it would inspire you. If you do not have cancer, this is a great resource for you to learn how to avoid it. If you have, or if you know somebody, share this information. There's hope. Cancer is not a death sentence. And so if you hit the wall with the treatment that you're having now, we're available. And so our number is 888-500-HOPE.
Wonderful. And I'll link this show in the show notes. We had Daniel Kennedy on. He has a docuseries on Amazon as well. If you guys are interested in learning more, Healthy Long Life, I believe is what it's called. Mm-hmm. I'll link that in the show notes, everybody, if you want to take a listen. But thank you, Dr. Contreras, again. This was such an inspirational and just amazing episode. I know I'm grateful, but I know all of the beautiful listeners are as well. And if you, just like you said, if you guys know of a loved one or a friend that, you know, could benefit from hearing this, please share this episode. Please share Dr. Contreras' work in the hospital, the book. But as us listeners, we want to thank you for showing up for us today and continuing to push for the care and the treatment of the whole person at Oasis of Hope. How may we, the listeners, as an act of service or as act of gratitude, be of service for you today in return for all of your love that you put out into the world?
Well, just if you know of anybody that has cancer, share the fact that life is beautiful, that they can be victors, and that they can enjoy life to the fullest every day, and that there are alternatives if they want to look for them.
Amen. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Contreras, for coming on the show today. I so enjoyed talking with you.
You're very welcome. God bless you.
And remember, open up, surrender, trust, and let your body lead the way.